Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's personal finance podcast where we discuss all things money. The first round of the mutual fund stress test for small cap and mid cap funds is over. The capital markets regulator, the Securities and Exchange Board of India, had directed all fund houses to assess their liquidity and how liquid their underlying portfolios really are. The objective of the test is to make investors aware of the risks and impact of market volatility on the liquidity of their equity portfolio and to help them take appropriate decisions to rebalance and redirect liquidity and savings. Money Control talked to Nirav Karkeda, head of research at Wisdom, on what the results of the stress test showed about small cap funds, do investors need to change their investment strategy, surprising numbers from the stress test results, and what can be expected in the subsequent data. Let's listen in.
Hi Nirav, welcome to Simply Save podcast.
Hi Abhinav, a pleasure.
Nirav, if you can begin with what was the need for this stress test of small cap and mid cap funds by SEBI and AMFI?
Yeah, so the small and mid cap segments have been seeing a lot of retail inflows and investor interest since quite some time now. Of course, the small and mid cap indices have been performing really well, and this has attracted a lot of attention. But you know, the inflows by retail investors has also grown significantly over the past couple of quarters. So, with concerns around valuations anyways out there, and worries after such a steep rally in the small caps and mid caps, the regulator seems to have believed that retail investors are investing in these small and mid-cap funds solely on the basis of recent performance. And this could be a cause of concern if the investing decision is not founded on much more fundamental reasons. So there is also a fair deal of risk involved in small and mid-cap investing. And among all, liquidity risk is something that was flagged from time to time. So we believe that the regulator and AMFI thought it would be a good idea to disclose the liquidity situation of small and mid caps, not just on a normal ongoing basis, but also in a stressful scenario wherein the volatility would be very heightened and there could be a lot of redemption pressure on these funds. So this would put into context a lot of investors, what's the kind of liquidity risk that is entailed in the small cap or mid cap funds that they're investing in.
So what exact data was asked from the fund houses to provide?
So there are a variety of data that the regulator and AMFI asked the fund houses to disclose as a part of the liquidity stress testing. And this is very specific to mid and small cap as a category. Some of the data also draws from data that is already out there in the fact sheet as per a previous guidance, like the portfolio beta, the portfolio trailing 12 month PE, the benchmark PE, the portfolio's turnover ratio, the portfolio's standard deviation. These are a few metrics that were already disclosed, but also forms a part of the stress test disclosure. Apart from that, there is also disclosures in terms of what is the allocation towards various market caps and what's the kind of cash that is held in the portfolio. So that's the allocation disclosure. Very notably, the new disclosures are, what is the number of days that it would take for a fund manager to liquidate 50% of the portfolio and 25% of the portfolio after excluding the bottom 20% illiquid portfolio, right? So this is something that is new and that was not available to the public at large previously. Another important line item that the stress test also includes is disclosure of the top 10 investors percentage holding within AUM. I feel this is something that is not talked about much, but this offers significant context in terms of the concentration risk and the liquidity risk also to quite some extent.
There has been argument that the time it takes theoretically for a fund manager to sell 25% or 50% of assets is of no use to investors in the real life scenario. Do you agree with this?
I won't say it is of complete utility. And at the same time, it's not completely useless as well. I feel it serves purpose as an indicative metric. I don't think anything less or anything more must be read into, because and this is due to a couple of reasons, right? So this is a hypothetical stress tested situation wherein the volumes are expected to go up by 3x, and you know, market participation will be capped to 10%. Now the real life scenario may be very different from that. The next thing about where you exclude 20% of the portfolio in terms of this 20% being the most illiquid 20% part of the portfolio, you know, it basically readjusts and effectively talks about liquidation of 40% and 20% of the portfolio if you look at it very effectively, considering the remainder 80% as a base. Also, there are a few concerns around the fact that if there was indeed a stressful situation, the need to liquidate the portfolio would be far more pronounced. And if you know, every investor is out there to redeem, there may not be adequate buyers for some part of the portfolio, right? And the prices would tank to a great degree. Now, the pricing impact is something that is not very well captured as a part of this liquidity stress test. Of course, that's not something that they were trying to capture also, but you know, the pricing impact is you know, is something that is still not available for investors to understand. So the utility is very limited to an extent that this is being indicative, and you know, it helps you know, compare at an almost level playing field, you know, wherein there is a fair standard for comparability among funds within the same category. So yes, it serves a utility to that extent as an indicative metric and as a standard for comparability.
Right. So you mentioned some concessions.
So while I'm not very sure of why it is 20% as a figure, but one tends to you know, extrapolate from the guidance that has given, and you know, if one were to make a fair guesstimate of what the situation at hand is, it seems as though you know, this is to bring the situation, the stress situation, as close to reality as possible, wherein you know, the entire portfolio may not be needed to be liquidated at any given point in time, and you know, the liquidity stress would be a percentage of the 80% of the portfolio, which also forms a material number of holdings you know, at that point. So the guesstimate is that that could be one reason to eliminate the bottom 20%, so that it comes closer to the real life situation, if at all a stress like situation is actually manifested.
Right. So now, coming to investors' point of view, why is this stress test important for them? And now the results are out, how they can like compare the data that is out and with their funds and match it, and I mean, come to conclusion whether they are risky or not.
So I feel more as a risk, more than a risk metric, the stress test results indicates the fund management style. You know, so of course there is liquidity risk to quite some extent, but it also reflects the fund manager's style of investing and his risk management framework. So if you look at all the metrics, it's not necessary that you know, a very liquid stock is a highly liquid stock or vice versa. So it simply indicates that under a stress situation, how long would it take for you know, the portfolio to be liquidated. So what if we were to you know, assume that such a stressful situation is not coming about very immediately, and you know, this metric must be used as a basis for investment decision making at this very moment, it serves as an indicator as to you know, which funds are holding more liquid stocks than the others, right? But this must be viewed in context of the quality also of the stocks and the various other risk measures that have been disclosed. It is also important to understand you know, what's the kind of concentration that is there within the fund. You know, so there's a line item where you know, it talks about what percentage of AUM is concentrated with the top 10 investors, and over here it basically indicates you know, the risk of a cascading effect in times of stress situations, right? So if the top 10 investors trigger a liquidity event, this could snowball into a larger liquidation event for the entire portfolio, because that's because typically you know the cash reserves that are generally managed for, to manage redemptions are not very high beyond a point, right? So one needs to triangulate a couple of these data points, such as what is the current AUM, what is the concentration with the top 10 investors, what's the general folio spread, how many folios is this AUM spread across, and then what is the number of days that it requires to liquidate the portfolio, while considering the constraints that the volatility will be, you know, 3x, the volumes will be 3x of what it was in the past couple of sessions as per the methodology, and only 10% market participation. So, you know, basically a combination of these factors should put into context, you know, what is the kind of liquidity risk that they're looking at. And, you know, it also helps, you know, compare different funds and their strategies and, you know, choose one that suits their needs the best, you know. But the moot point being that, you know, this liquidity stress test is not a substitute for a quality test. It is possible that the liquidity could be slightly lower in a high quality stock and vice versa, where the liquidity could be relatively higher in a lower quality stock.
In terms of stress test results, there were data which showed that some funds will take up to 60 days to liquidate 50% of the portfolio, but some could do it within a day itself. So given this, do you expect or do you suggest investors to move from fund taking longer time to liquidate to fund liquidating a shorter time?
See, one thing that investors must understand is that there is also a very softer correlation between the size of the fund and the number of days that it is taking to liquidate, right? So the ones that are taking the highest number of days also inadvertently have the highest AUM. Right. So if it's such a large AUM, especially managed in the small cap fund, and you restrict market participation to 10%, it would, of course, take a longer period to liquidate. But that does not imply that the quality of the portfolio is good or bad in any way. That in isolation does not imply any of it. You know, mathematically, a smaller AUM would take much lesser time to liquidate, you know, considering all things remain constant and comparable between other funds. So, you know, one need not worry, because also a larger AUM typically implies a large number of folios that such AUM is spread across. And if you look at the concentration of assets with the top 10 investors, that is also marginal, which indicates something very similar, you know, that there's a pretty wide spread of folios. So the likelihood of, you know, not just 50% AUM being redeemed at any given point in time, but the fact that you know, such a large number of folio holders redeeming at the same time is relatively low from a practical standpoint, right? So one must not worry a lot in that situation, as long as they have conviction in the fund management and the portfolio of the fund. You know, so these three points is something that will put things into greater context: the AUM, the number of days that it takes to liquidate, and the folio spread, which can be you know, slightly extrapolated from looking at the concentration with the top 10 investors.
Right. So among all the data points, among all the fund houses, were the results on the expected lines? Any data that surprised you? Any data from a particular fund house that surprised you?
So I would say at the very outset, there was a positive surprise, because considering the rally in the markets and the fact that there was meaningful participation in low float stocks, there was a sort of expectation that the data would reflect a much higher count of days to liquidate the portfolio in a stressful situation. But overall, the data is looking really good and reflects very good liquidity health of the entire industry in the mid cap and small cap categories. I feel there are a few you know, specific players that actually you know, surprised positively as well as negatively. You know, so there were initially apprehensions around you know, quant mid cap fund, wherein you know, it is expected to be a very aggressive player, and it has participated in stocks where the float was relatively low in the past as well. So the expectations were that the in the mid cap category specifically, the number of days to liquidate could be slightly higher. But you know, the numbers that have come out is really confidence inducing. You know, the numbers are really low. It reflects a relatively highly liquid portfolio. So Quant Midcap Fund actually surprised on the upside. There were a few other fund houses that did really well. I feel on the downside, I was slightly disappointed in the small cap category, where Tata Small Cap Fund, despite having a relatively lower AUM, is has exhibited that it would take far longer to liquidate its portfolio. So that stands out as an outlier, wherein most other numbers are in sync and largely in the understandable range. This one seems slightly off from what one could have expected. I feel another positive surprise is Bandhan Small Cap Fund, wherein given the size, it is offering a relatively liquid portfolio. I feel that is also a positive surprise.
Right. So now coming to the small cap category, there are conflicting views on froth in the small cap space itself. Some experts say high valuations are justified given earnings growth, but others say small caps are vulnerable. What are your views?
So, first and foremost, I believe small caps must not be viewed as a basket in entirety. The opportunities are very stock specific, company specific, and the sectors, the industries are highly fragmented in the small cap segment. So are the opportunities and risks. Now, but having said that, even if one were to look at an aggregate level, I feel from a time series standpoint, the valuations do indeed seem elevated at this point in time. However, if you were to look at the valuations in context of earning growth and the expectations of earning growth going ahead, it would not seem as steeply valued. Of course, it is not cheap at this point in time, but it is not as expensive as most most people seem to believe it is. We still believe there's a lot of opportunity for growth within the small cap segment. It is implied that such opportunities are pocket specific, company specific, and requires a thorough bottom-up analysis. However, there is significant scope for upside in several pockets of small cap. So at a very broader level, although it may seem as if there's a lot of run-up, we believe opportunities still exist within several pockets, and one must not get swayed in favor or against small caps while looking at the numbers in isolation and simply on the basis of time series and at a basket level.
Do you think that large small cap funds face higher risk compared to small cap funds?
So smaller size small cap funds always have the benefit of being more agile and nimble, having the ability to maneuver around with their portfolios without much risk of liquidity or impact cost. So that's always in favor of a well-managed small cap fund that is smaller in size as well.
Right. So this exercise by the mutual funds houses will be repeated every 15 days. The data, they'll come out with the data set every 15 days. So do you expect that there will be major changes in liquidity scenario and other data points when the consequent stress test results come out?
So this time around, the instructions to release such data came in midway almost, and there was very limited time for fund managers to adjust their portfolios to show better numbers. However, now that this is going to be a regular affair, we believe and we expect fund managers to be more conscious of how their liquidity positions are standing, and we expect most fund houses to try and realign their portfolios in favor of more liquid stocks, so that it offers significantly higher comfort to small and mid-cap investors as well.
The return parts come from the risk. I mean, especially in the small cap fund, higher returns come from higher risk. So when mutual fund managers consciously align fund portfolio with better liquidity, do you think that will take an impact on the returns going forward?
I don't think so. So I feel the fact that higher risk yields higher returns, it is very unidimensional. There are different types of risks that one undertakes to chase returns, and a good quality portfolio can still be built, and a high growth portfolio can still be built without compromising a lot on liquidity risk, to say the least, right? So the risk in question here, which we are expecting them to align with, is liquidity risk. So while they're free to take every other inherent risk and take exposure to systemic risks, that's where most of the returns come from. There's hardly any returns that comes from taking on liquidity risk. So we don't believe that this alignment realignment will particularly affect performance to a significant degree, at least not in isolation because of this.
Can we see concentration of portfolio in a limited number of stocks, because they look at liquidity, and in small caps the liquid stocks are lesser. More and more funds would be chasing a limited set of stocks then?
There is a case for that to happen, but it's mostly on paper because the market depth has also improved significantly over the past couple of years. So there are significant opportunities that mutual funds can play where the liquidity profile is also decent enough. If all funds were to focus and revolve around a select set of funds, the valuation thesis would become really weak for these stocks, because then you can imagine a bulk of the demand being redirected towards a select set of stocks would imply the prices to run up at least slightly beyond what its reasonable valuation demands, and that would lead to several funds again taking a back step and not going for that. So it's a self-correctionary cycle. So there is, while on paper there is a case for such a thing to happen, we believe that over the past couple of years, the depth has improved significantly enough to offer a wide variety of opportunities across a reasonably higher number of scripts. These larger number of scripts has enough depth to absorb new inflows and liquidity that would come in by route of inflows into small and mid-cap funds and small-cap funds very specifically.
Thank you, Nirav. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
With that, it's a wrap on this edition of Simply Save. For more news, views, and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.